Hello and welcome to Undaunted, where each episode I talk to fellow podcasters about what went wrong, what went well, and what just didn't matter. This week, I have an amazing guest, my personal podcasting mentor, and I don't even say mentor because he's only shot me a couple emails about actually podcasting, but this guy has been my inspiration for why I want to podcast and how I got into it and my actual introduction to podcasting, Dr. Tom Merritt.
Ah, thank you for using my proper title, a doctor of podcasting.
Yes, not enough people do.
I appreciate that.
That's a carryover from Brian Cooley, and I've never let it go.
Commander Brian Cooley, yes, always call me doctor. Man, I feel like we're doing OG podcasting right now. We're on the streets of Austin.
Yeah, during South By.
Yeah.
Hey, this is amazing.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing we used to do back in 2006 in the early days. Like, I love this.
All right, so what we like to do is, what I like to do is find out what got you into podcasting and where you've gone with it. Now, a lot of people have covered how you got into podcasting and your whole history with it. So instead of asking how you got into podcasting, How did you deal with the transition from standard media of just, you know, putting stuff, articles out there to a media that actually accepts your voice and broadcasts that out there and people can access it at all times?
Yeah. So for anybody who doesn't know, the short version is I got into podcasting at CNET in 2005 because I saw that people like Adam Curry were doing podcasting and I wanted to try it out. And there were a few other people like James Kim, Molly Wood, Mark Larkin, who all had similar ideas. Candy Myers, our boss, said, let's have a round table. Let's all figure it out. And we started doing podcasts at CNET. And it was very different because while CNET had just started stepping into doing video, which is actually harder, they had no structure for audio. So we tried to figure out, like, okay, what do people want from on-demand audio? We tried to keep it short. 5 to 10 minutes. That didn't last for very long. It ended up being a 30-minute show very, very shortly. We tried to cover a couple of stories that were in the news that day. That stuck, and we expanded on that. But I think the craziest thing about what we did back then was we didn't have a server for MP3s. We had a server for web pages. We had a server for video. But the guy who was originally doing the Buzz Out Loud podcast, and he only did it for a month or two before Veronica Belmont took over, he's just stuck them on a Dropbox. And I'm not talking about the company Dropbox. It's before them. But we had a Dropbox that was meant to put things that you needed to share with clients. And he's like, well, it's publicly accessible. We'll just stick our MP3s over there and and link to them. And then, you know, people can get it. And I remember when we finally started to get enough listeners, the IT department started to complain that the Dropbox was slowing down. They're like, that server's getting hit by so much traffic. We don't understand why. And then we had to actually come up with a solution.
Wow. That's awesome. So you guys started Buzz Out Loud when?
March 30th, 2005.
2005.
Was the first publicly posted one. We actually started it in February.
But how many trial episodes did you do?
Three or four. I can't remember anymore. It feels like it was about a month worth of trial episodes before we actually put one public.
And it started out weekly, right?
Yeah, once a week on Wednesday.
So what was it? What was the switch that said, you know what, we're ready to actually send this out, and it's not a trial anymore?
We went through a couple of iterations where we would record a show. We'd sit down with Candy Myers and Mark Larkin. Candy was our boss. Mark was the guy in charge of CNET TV, which just kind of fell under at the time. And we said, what do we like about it? What do we don't like about it? And the hilariously to me, early feedback was, Tom needs to let Molly talk more. Because I had done radio, so I was very comfortable like jumping in and filling in dead air spaces.
Right.
And Molly was, you know, she had done lots of video, but she was very much more reserved. And so when I would jump in to fill dead air, she would
let
me.
How the tides would
change. As we know, Molly, that is not her normal, like, she was fighting against her own instincts there. Thank goodness that we figured that out. And then, yeah, once we got to a balance where it felt like we were having those conversations, and that's what Mark Larkin wanted us to capture, was the kind of conversations that Molly and I would have just like around the lunch table. Once we felt like, okay, we're finally starting to capture that feel, that's when we put it out.
Awesome, awesome. So you've had several iterations of your own podcasting experience. You went from Buzz Out Loud, you started doing CNET Top 5, was released as a podcast before you left CNET. Probably some other things that I missed. And then you went over to TNT,
yep.
Tech News Today. Over on the Twit Network.
Frame rate, forecast.
Yep. Frame rate, by the way, since we're here at South By, I feel obligated to mention, frame rate was my introduction to Brian Brushwood.
Oh, no kidding.
It was.
What a weird introduction to Brian Brushwood. That's awesome.
So, yeah, it took me a little while to catch on to the NSFW show at the time.
But at scam school.
Exactly. I'm still catching up on those. So as you went through those different iterations, what are some of the lessons that you learned about podcasting itself and the art of podcasting?
I think one thing I probably don't talk about enough, and you pointed out, because I did so many different kinds of shows. I did a video show at CNET. I did audio shows that were solo called The Real Deal, which I eventually hosted with Rafe Needleman, that was trying to like dig into issues. And what worked for Buzz Out Loud didn't work for Real Deal. What worked for Buzz Out Loud didn't necessarily always work for Tech News Today at Twit. And what worked for Buzz Out Loud and Tech News Today sometimes doesn't work for Daily Tech News Show, which I do now. So the biggest thing I realized was each show is different. And you can't just say, well, the things you got to do are have a forum and a chat room and then this is how you make your podcast and this is the rundown you should use. Every audience is going to be different. Every audience wants to be in a different place. So for Cord Killers, it's the chat room and the blog. For DTNS, it's the chat room and the subreddit and the blog. For Sword and Laser, it's the Goodreads group and the blog. I mean, the blog is always kind of the central base, I guess, because that's where we create our feeds out of. But everybody's got a different place where their audience is and the things that work for them.
That's awesome. So I noticed when you switched over from Buzz Out Loud, it broke my heart when you left. Like, it hurt. I was like, why?
Yeah, it's my own fault. I apologize.
I think it worked out, though. And you went to Tech News Today, and you started that. And to watch the transition, the growing pains that you went through, trying to find, you know, your own foot as basically the sole lead, because you had eventually had Iaz and Sarah. But,
well, it was
you know,
me and Becky off the top. But, yeah, Becky was only there 3 days a week. So
right. So, you went through some different changes there. At what point did you finally feel that Tech News Today had found its foot and you were going to run with this particular format? Was it, was there something, some kind of event, or was it a particular episode?
I don't remember a particular moment, but I feel like when we shifted the news fuse, which was Eric's idea, and sadly Eric's not with us anymore, and I'm very, very sad about that. But he had the idea of creating a place for stories we didn't have time to spend on with a regular discussion. We put it at the end of the show originally, and when we moved it to the top of the show, suddenly that is when I felt like it crystallized. And it seems obvious in retrospect, like, come on, you idiot, everybody puts their headlines at the top. But we weren't thinking of them as headlines at the beginning. And, of course, now I call them headlines on DTNS. It was just kind of giving in to the obviousness. And the way we pick them for Daily Tech News Show is very different than the way we picked them for the news views back in the day, because they were meant to be supplementary back then.
Right.
But, yeah, like once we inverted that and became a very much like that classic pyramid-style show is when we really hit our groove.
Now, you went from TNT, and things happened at Twit. You found your own way. You decided, okay, this is the way I need to go. And Daily Tech News Show has evolved in and of itself. In like I don't even want to say it's the same path. It's kind of found it's really its own way from the very get-go.
It has stumbled around
with Patreon
on its own,
and with Jenny and everything else. And when did you really feel that DTNS was the way? It was like, this is...
Yeah, I mean...
Because you're still making changes. I mean, just recently you've changed how you format things a little bit. There's more conversation during the headline section, but it's not an abundant amount.
That was the biggest thing that we played around with, because originally when I did Daily Tech News Show, my guiding principle was, what can I do alone? So I took the idea of like, well, I wrote this many headlines on Tech News Today, so I'll do that many headlines on DTNS. I'll rip through them really quick with brief comments, and then we'll have two discussion topics, because I used to have two discussion topics that I would create on Tech News Today. Mm-hmm. And over time, we've evolved that to the point of saying, no, we actually have people who want to discuss these headlines. People like to hear a little more about the headlines. So we're gonna dig into that more, and we're going to reduce it. And a long time ago, we reduced it to one topic per day, for the most part, with a few exceptions, so that we could really dig into those discussion topics. And I think the most recent thing, once the contributors started doing the show regularly, and they've been doing it for a year, having them comfortable to say, well, we don't have to pick a topic out of the news. We just have to pick a topic that's newsworthy, and making those discussion topics a little more evergreen. I think that's one of the biggest differences that DTNS has over previous shows that I've done.
Now, you talked about contributors. You have four regular contributors, Monday through Thursday.
Five. Well, don't forget Darren.
I wish he was more regular.
Yeah, he's got a hack five to run.
Yeah, he's got a whole business. But you got your contributors, and they each bring a different personality to it. How often do you have to shift things around to match the personality versus the story when it's not an immediate newsworthy story?
Yeah, that's
because I notice this a lot with Patrick, especially.
That's
Patrick
a really
Bejo.
Good question. I don't shift it around at all in the headlines. Mm-hmm. The headlines, my focus is what do I think are the things that usually three or four things that are most important that day, and the other things that will give you a more interesting take on various things that are happening in technology, whether it's a scientific advance or something international that you might not otherwise hear about. That's the same no matter who's on the show with me. I might write it a little different because I want to write it to their voice,
right.
But I pick the same actual stories. The discussion topic, we have actually changed it to be entirely dependent on the contributor. So what are you interested in talking about? What do you know a lot about? What guest could you get because you know them or you're interested in having them on? So it's both ends of the coin within the same show.
So the way DTNS is now, you've got your contributors, you've got your producer, you just had a recent change with producers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when we talked last year at South By, you said that Roger Chang was going to take more of a role and he's going to really start stepping into it and kind of growing into that producer role. But now that Jenny is actually, I don't want to say she's not producing because she's still there.
We're flip-flopping them.
Exactly. She's taking the minor role. He's taking the lead role. How do you expect that to change?
I don't think it'll change much. I mean, the things that will change a lot with Jenny moving over to Marketplace is that she will not be in the pre and the post show. I don't want to say she won't ever be in it, but it's going to be difficult, especially at the beginning, for her to be in that pre and post show. And so the fans who tune in live or listen to the Treasure Chest version or the YouTube version are going to miss her. And that is definitely a big change. On the actual meat of the show that goes out in the audio podcast feed, you shouldn't see much change at all because the things that Jenny does, she will still be doing that affect your show. And Roger is very good at booking guests, which is really the biggest change of responsibility between the two. And we have the contributors booking, like suggesting guests and things like that. So content-wise, it's still me. And Roger's going to be great with guests. And Jenny is still there advising, saying, hey, what about this topic? What about that topic? What about specials? It's really only in the extra content, which I think is really important to a lot of people, that you might see a change.
Okay, so now we've discussed where you came from, where you are now, the recent stuff that you're doing on DTNS, which is in my opinion, the best tech news show there is, daily or otherwise. And I think a lot of that is the contributions that you get from the listenership and everything else. Let's start getting to the hard-hitting topics. Where have you failed as a podcaster?
Oh, my gosh. So many things. The real deal is the first one that comes to mind, where I thought in my hubris that I could just host a show where I explained things to people and it would be easier because I wouldn't have to deal with all these other folks. And the fact of the matter was, that's really hard because when you're the only one, you have to do all those things yourself. When I say I was the only one, like I was running the board, I was editing, I was doing all of it. Everything myself. And just keeping a conversation going with yourself is the most difficult thing. It's one thing to like take on all the responsibilities, but then once you actually get in the booth and you start recording, to keep that interesting to people when there's no one to bounce off of, no one to fill in your gap when you start to try to think of something, way, way difficult. Which is why eventually I asked Rafe Needleman to join me, and thankfully he did. And I think that improved the show tremendously. Now, I'm not saying you can't do a one-mic show. I think Justin Robert Young, among many people, has shown that it can be done really well. And he's inspired me to try that again, which I've done with Pretend I'm Dumb About Star Wars. Yeah. But I think that probably is one of the biggest failures. There was also a CNET show we did, and it was mostly done because there was a sponsor for it. It was called Road Warrior, and it just never had a focus. It was called Road Warrior because that's what the sponsor wanted. Like, we want stuff for Road Warriors. But we never quite figured out what it was. and
So the sponsor-driven show
is it's easy to blame the sponsor, but like it really was on us to be like, okay, well, that is a thing. People talk about Road Warriors and their mobile Blackberries and everything, and we just could never crack what that was going to be. There's that. And then in general, my biggest overall failing often is not wanting to delegate. And Real Deal is an example of that. Like not wanting to let go, let other people like help out. I have a hard time asking for help sometimes.
Right. So with that being said, it's so much easier when I can just mute myself.
See?
With that being said, you've been a very successful podcaster.
Well, I hope so. Thank you.
How do you personally, because you have your Patreon, you have you live viewers and things like that, but how do you personally judge your success, and how are you sitting against that judgment? Like, where would you grade yourself, and what metric, if any, do you use for that?
I give myself a C+. I used to be harder on myself.
Be ever modest.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of my success I owe to the generosity of people who are willing to see the value in what I do. I mean, there's lots of little things that I could improve on. I could have a better set. I could roll in graphics. I could tighten up the show. I could try to book like Barack Obama. I don't know. Like, there's all kinds of things I could shoot for. I'm very conservative in that sense. I like to go very slowly. I like to do things very carefully. So I feel like I need to do better about forging forward. And I've got good friends who encourage me to do that. And content-wise, I feel better. I give myself more of a B+ in the content. Like, I've been doing this long enough that I'm getting really good at that. But I'm hard on myself. Like, I hate it when I make an obvious mistake. It's one thing to make a mistake that I couldn't have known because I'm not an expert in that area. I love that. I love when someone's like, hey, I'm an actual engineer.
Let me
point something out. I hate it when it's someone like, hey, you missed that in the article you linked to, it says that the price was $199 and you said there was no price. Like, when I make those kind of mistakes, I just, I kill myself.
Oh, man. So where do you expect yourself to go? And on a grander scale, for podcasting in general, the art form, because I truly believe it is an art form. It's a new media, fine, you can call it whatever you want, but I think it's a true art form that we're creating things that people actually want to view, which is better than half the art forms out there.
I'm a big believer that knowing history helps you understand the future of something. Not to get too like highfalutin here, but podcasting is just the next generation of storytelling. From standing around the campfires to bards in the medieval era to radio and now podcasting, we've always enjoyed hearing other people talk and tell us about the hunt, or tell us about the king, or tell us about technology news.
Right.
It's always, you know, like there's fiction, which is another, that's another aspect of that. But then there's like, tell us what has been going on. And I think that's where podcast's future is not losing sight of like, that's what makes people want to do this. And you could talk about monetization and distribution platforms, and there's all kinds of different ways this could go. And the technology is coming where we're going to have virtual reality podcasts, and the ability to, you know, like hang out and sit at the table with Chris Hardwick when he does The Nerdist and all kinds of awesome things like that. But the essential of it will always be, are you telling a good, compelling story that people find either entertaining or useful or both?
So who do you look up to as far as podcasting goes? Like, who are your I mean, you're obviously my idol, as we've discussed, but who are your idols as far as podcasting specifically, or even just in journalism?
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've been a long-time journalist, not just, you know.
I mean, there's so many good podcasters. I don't look up to any single one. I take from all of them. I take from my friends. I take the energy of Brian Brushwood. I take the insight of Justin Robert Young. I take the thoughtfulness of Patrick Beja, the enthusiasm and smartness of Veronica Belmont. Like, I take all of them directly. I'm inspired by the pioneering of Leo Laporte and an Adam Curry. And then I really hope to be able to have the storytelling ability, you know, of a Walter Cronkite or an Edward R. Murrow, or even some of the great British broadcasters who have been able to narrate our history. I'm nowhere near those people. But I get inspired by just good performances like that.
Now, you mentioned fiction. I happen to know that you're a bit of a fiction writer yourself.
Yeah, I dabble.
So that leads me to your side projects, not just other podcasts and your books, things like that, but you do a plethora of activities. You're all over the place. How do those activities, especially your books and things like that, but how did those enhance your podcasting, and how does your podcasting feed back into those other creative forms?
Yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about it before, but there is a storytelling synchronicity between them. The fact that I'm trying to take the experience I have with live podcasting, where I have to think on my feet and come up on the fly with a way to turn what we're talking about into a compelling narrative that people can wrap their heads around and understand.
Or even just one of your famous transitions.
And then, yeah, or segues. and then take that and put that into fiction form. Sometimes I'm like, oh, well, this is how a conversation would go. And I know this because I have conversations every day for a living. That definitely helps. And vice versa, like seeing the structure of a narrative in print form and being able to say, okay, like that's ABC of a story. That's going to help me when I'm trying to explain the Apple encryption debate to form it in a way that people can wrap their heads around.
Cool. Now, finally, where do you, or what advice would you have for other podcasters that either been in the business forever, and I'm sure you've listened to them, you'd be like, all right, this particular person should, maybe they'd be able to do this, or new podcasters that are just starting out, maybe 6 months in, what advice would you give them?
Yeah. The advice for the new podcasters I find easier to give because I've been doing it long enough. I feel confident in saying, like, keep at it, stay consistent, be just hard enough on yourself that you get better, but not so hard that you get discouraged.
That's a difficult balance.
You want to look at your stuff and find things you can improve on, but don't be mad at yourself when you find things that you can improve on. Like, that's why you're looking, and be like, oh, no, the reason I'm looking is to, like, not do that again next time. And just keep doing it, you know, as long as you enjoy doing it. For the folks who've been doing this as long as me, I don't know. Like, yeah, man, I don't know. You got any ideas? I'm all ears. Like, I'm still trying to figure this out, too. So
I think some of the podcasts that I listen to, I listen to it for a short period of time and it dies off. And it's always the ones that don't have the fan interaction or at least the response to their fans. So, but on that front, you're excellent with that because you've had the fan interaction at least since Buzz Out Loud.
Yeah, there's a great Venn diagram of laziness and engagement, and you don't want to go too far either way. But you know, people are willing to help you make a better show, and so you should let them. And that's why I include emails in my show, because I get those emails from engineers and pilots and people who work at Six Flags telling me, like, no, this is actually the way it goes.
Right.
And that makes my show better. And at the same time, I also don't try not to overuse the privilege. I'm not so lazy that I'm, like, relying on other people to make everything. So.
Okay. And in closing, the last thing that I ask you, and this is somewhat self-centered, but I mean, we're here, right? So to those who you've inspired to podcast, and I, of course, myself, but then you got like Scott Johnson, who famously, you know, interacting with you inspired him to say, hey, I'm going to do this full time. I'm taking the leap.
I'll be honest. It was more Veronica than me, but yeah.
What would you tell them?
I would tell Scott, come back from your vacation and start podcasting again with us, because now you're rested. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to tell your peers anything, because that's who they are. Like, but if anyone has looked at what I've done and said, "Wow, I want to do something like that," I would say, "That's awesome. Do it. Don't make excuses why you don't want to do it. Get in there and keep at it, but do it your way." Don't feel like because me or Scott or Brian or anybody that you see, Dan Harmon, anybody, does it this way, that is the way you have to do it. Steal ideas, borrow ideas when they work for you, and come up with things of your own and combine them in new ways.
Awesome. So this is the part of the show we've kind of, well, I and my guests have kind of started making fun of this area of the show, but it's the mandatory's part. Where can people find Tom Merritt?
Well, I think we're at 6th and San Jacinto.
we actually are, yeah.
Right at the moment.
Right outside Darwin's
Pub.
But
they're probably not listening to this while we're here.
So, man, that'd be impressive by Roberto Villas over
yeah.
here.
TomMerritt.com, two R's, two T's, is my website that collects everything I do together, and DailyTechNewsShow.com for the tech news.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming out here and doing this ad hoc interview.
Oh, I love it. This is great. And it didn't rain on us. Thank goodness.
For something that was planned for months, literally planned for months, this actually worked out really well.
Yeah. This is awesome. Thanks,
man. Hopefully the sound came out. Well, excellent. So so you can find this show, Undaunted. Cruise on over to ritualmisery.com. You'll find all the links over there. You can find me at Ethan Kane. You can find Tom Merritt at Ace Detect. With one of the E's missing, I'll let you figure out which one it is. And if you have any feedback or anything else, undauntedpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know. Thank you, Tom. And to all the aspiring and starting out podcasters, thank you for joining us on this journey.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.